I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next on the agenda is roll call, and Eugene will call in. He is not feeling too good tonight. So if I have a motion, Eugene, so move. Dan first, Mark seconded. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes. Excuse Eugene. Counselor Eugene, I should say. Okay, next is Mayor's presentation.
Figure this out somewhere.
There we go. Dan, you want to come up? I'm pretty excited tonight to present this because I don't know if we've ever had anybody get this far into education as far as a council member or mayor. What we have tonight is a certificate for Ken to receive a certificate of municipal leadership. You must receive 30 CML credits and attend at least one workshop in four areas, which is not easy to do. So I've got a fair amount of them that I don't have in all the areas. The minimum of 5 credits in each core area is highly recommended, and the core areas are the roles, responsibilities, and legal requirements, public sector, resource management, community planning and development, effective local leadership. And I guess that, to me, what it really shows me is that Ken's seriousness about being a council member. You know, he just re-elected him a couple of years ago, and he's really taken on the role of setting aside the time, you know, which we all know time is very vital to each one of us. And so tonight, I just really want to congratulate Ken. Get a certificate here for it, Ken Johnson. And just want to say thank you very much.
Thank you.
Really committed yourself to the city. It's a big thing, so it's not easy to do. But thank you again.
He's got all the good graphics and all the capability with Outlook.
and PowerPoint, so I'm kind of robbing from him. But I thought this slide was great because it shows you the main canal where all the water comes from out of the Grand Coulee Dam, Banks Lake, down the siphon, and then into the main canal at near Panel Dam. This is a great slide that shows you the value of irrigation. If you'll notice, each canal, Lincoln, Adams, and Grant, has a million acres of farmland in it. The size of the farm is significantly smaller in Grant County, but look at the number of the production there for each county. Grant County is the Bell Ringer with over $1 billion in production. Adams County is no slacker at $344 million. This is kind of the baseline for future development of the Columbia Basin project that I think is important. It's a fairly, and by the way, a copy of this PowerPoint is in your packet, so you should be able to take that. This is really good information just to take with you and be aware of. Basically, the reclamation water right dates back to 1938, so it's a fairly senior water right, which is important. You also need to understand that the Bureau project needs to operate under NEPA. That's the National Environmental Protection Act. And the ESA, that's the Endangered Species Act. There's also a thing called the FCRPS buyout, which is basically the diversion cap that could be diverted from the Columbia River for irrigation. So those are all sideboards that are important for us to remember. And also remember that ecology, the State of Washington Department of Ecology, right there at the bottom bullet, is a critical partner in anything that goes on out there. So the Columbia Basin Development League has been very active in trying to address the concerns of the declining Odessa subarea aquifer. You guys are in ground zero right out east of here as far as the declining water tables with the groundwater permits. And these have gone, the water levels have gone down significantly over the last 20, 25 years. So one of our former Governor Gregoire's first acts back in 2006 was to put together this Columbia River Basin Water Management Act to basically address the issues of the declining aquifers and to try to solve that problem. This is another graph of picture of basically what's going on. The bold line is the East Low Canal. It's right out west of town here. And you'll notice all of those circles that are outside the project. Apparently drawing water from the aquifer. So what this Odessa subarea special study was to try to do, to address was the declining aquifers, develop a plan. And that plan was basically to replace 50 to 100,000 acres of irrigated cropland water. Basically, it was not a block development, it was a water replacement program. And that EIS was first released in 2010, and then the final report was completed in August of 2012. So the final EIS again was completed in 2012. Basically, its thrust was to develop around 70,000 acres of water replacement acres, and about a third of that would be north of the freeway. About two thirds of that was south of the freeway. So you're directly in the area of this expansion. Right here in the fellow. So this, let me try to go back if I could just a little bit. Notice, I don't think that it shows on this view, maybe it does on your outlook, but there's basically pipelines that go out from the canal. And there's three or four of them south of the freeway, and I think one north of the freeway. Again, this is open to modification, and basically what we're waiting for right now is the record of decision that will be coming out from the Bureau of Reclamation anytime. Again, the Bureau of Reclamation, after this final EIS was put out, needed to then consult with other federal agencies, such as the National Marine Fisheries, Bonneville, Power Administration, EPA, and others. And again, we also had to consider tribal rights. They have a trust responsibility for the tribes. And so from that, then that's kind of what's going on right now with this record of decision. And we expect it any time. It could be coming out as early as the middle of February. So that's what's going on right now with the Bureau of Reclamation. DOE, Department of Ecology, Columbia River stakeholders are pursuing $31.7 million capital project in the with the state legislature. Again, that's recognized as one of the top priorities for Governor Inslee, and that would basically expand the East Low Canal from the freeway down to Lynn Cool. So you guys are right at ground zero of where it's happening as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, and the Columbia Basin Development League, which I'm the chair of, our focus is on facilitating and providing outreach and working with the Bureau of Reclamation, the Department of Ecology, and state and federal legislators to make this project happen. So, how am I doing on time? It's about 11 after. I'll be glad to take any kind of questions that you might have concerning this project. Again, you've got the packet of information that you can review later on. And again, I do want to give credit to Mike Schmizzo, our lobbyist, who's actually in Olympia working right now. He sent me this PowerPoint, otherwise it'd be a lot less than this. Finally, I'd like to say that our executive director is down at Tri-Cities this evening, working on one of her projects. Her name is Vicki Charlo, and she's the person that you need to probably talk to if you have questions, or myself. And again, I'm located out of Ellensburg, so thanks for letting me come across the canal or the Columbia Basin, Columbia River tonight to come talk to you guys. Excuse me. Any questions?
I got one comment here. When he's talking about Mike Swisslow, I happen to have the opportunity over the weekend to actually hear his comments on this, and you did a good job. But Mike did an excellent job on how to tie all this together and putting pressure on the federal government as well as our state to work on it. Barb was there too at that presentation, and he really actually pushed this issue, and I'm sure that we're gonna get that funded. I think it's gonna happen. We've got quite a few things going in as far as the legislators concerned. But it also affects this $31 million that you're talking about out of the state. And I think that most of them are behind that to make that happen. And I appreciate your work on it.
Yeah. Well, again, this is a critical project because that record of decision is really the next step. And it's a key step. The state funding of the $31.7 million for the expansion of the East Low is important. And once we get that spine, then we can go to the next step, which is to allocate that water. And again, this is going to be a really challenging issue, how the Bureau of Reclamation and the East District Irrigation, East Columbia Irrigation District, located right here with Craig Simpson, allocates that water north and south and throughout the area. And it's going to be a project that's going to be a challenge for everybody. But the thing we need to keep our focus on is that this is very important. We see the value of water, and people ask me, why is a guy from Ellensburg involved with the Columbia Basin Development League? And I'm sure you kind of ask me that yourselves here. I know that the value of irrigation and the value of water is our heartbeat. It's the heartbeat of our development and our sustainability. Our towns cannot survive without water, and so growth is dependent upon this expansion, and it's a very important thing.
You had mentioned that 31.7 million dollars is just from the freeway to Lake Willie.
It'll be other things as well. There's probably I'm not a detailed person on what they're actually going to use that funding for, but the primary funding would be to expand the canal and also to work on infrastructure.
So they talk about doubling the size of it, or?
I don't know how much bigger it would be. But again, you're all aware that whatever siphon that went into the freeway with this, federal funding that happened after 2009, that now is a very critical piece that the Bureau of Reclamation went out and grabbed and obtained to get under the freeway. Now we can go to that next step. So, you know, we've had a lot of successes. There's no question about that with this. Because of everybody's cooperation, we're all focused on the vision of replacing that aquifer water. In my former life, I retired from the Department of Natural Resources here a couple of years ago. And I had the opportunity and the good fortune to be the land manager for state lands throughout this whole region. And I know we had wells out east of here that we had to dry up. And that went from irrigated row crop ground to dry land egg. And there's no question the difference in revenue that makes when you go back to dry land egg. And we don't want to see that happen on a wide scale basis. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Tim, I got one. Talking along that same lines to put the pressure as far as help finish this Columbia Basin project, it'll also take those wells offline, which can be used for other things as well. For instance, City of Othello here. I mean, they talk about our bowl of water here, but is it or isn't? Nobody can tell you that way. But you take like Lynn, Ritzville, some of those towns. If they take the pressure off of those deep wells, those cities will be able to continue using that water where they can't use the surface water. And if they use the surface water to replace those wells, then it'll help all the cities. And then they're also going with a more or less a pressure system rather than a canal system. So that way they can develop more of that land in the future to where they don't have to follow the grade of the land to use that for farm irrigation. So that'll help also, and it'll save a lot of water. So.
I'm not here to tout their horn tonight, but I just want to commend the Groundwater Management Agency for the work they've done on identifying the water level declines throughout this whole area. I pulled this map off of out of the EIS. I'm sure it came from Paul Stoker here in his office here in Othello, where Chrysler needs. But it shows the level of decline that's happened in the water levels that's been documented over the last 20 years. and its significance, and it's well documented, and that's the motivator for everybody in the state of Washington to really make this thing work. And I'll just leave this here with you so you can take it and review it and pass it over.
Well, thank
you. That was on the final PIS.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for coming down.
My pleasure. And I want to commend the folks that have this. When you built the city hall there, I've been here for a number of times, but this is a great office building, and I really enjoy coming to it. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, 2.02, City Comprehensive Plan. Daryl.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm Daryl Piercy, City Planner. What I'd like to do this evening is just reintroduce you back into the thought of the city's comprehensive planning process. As you may recall, we were working on this comprehensive plan on a section-by-section basis over the course of the last 12 months or so with council. We had a brief rest from that process as you went through your budget cycle and met those deadlines, and now we can step back and refocus our efforts and energies on completing the comprehensive plan process. You may recall we've gone through each of the sections that are in the plan, at least those critical sections that set out the goals and policies. You've had an opportunity to review those, and we've made some modifications to those goals and policies based on council input through that process. We're now at the point where we're bringing the package together for you for kind of a first look-see to see what the whole package looks like when you bring all of those elements into one document. There are really four outstanding issues that are left to be accomplished on the comprehensive plan. One of those is, and they're all fairly minor, they're not big policy issues. One is obtaining and developing a historical synopsis of the city of Othello, so we can include that within the comprehensive plan. You'll notice within your packets that section currently is blank, and it's only because we just have not developed what I think is an adequate representation of the rich history of the city of Othello and the importance of several individuals and processes and industries such as agriculture that have really played a key role in Othello's development. And so we want to make sure those are addressed and included properly within your comprehensive plan. The other issue is there's just the need now that we've gone through this section by section, both with the Planning Commission and with the Council, it's taken over a period of a couple of years, some reconciliation between numbers and facts that are contained within the plan now. We've gone through a new census cycle, we have some additional information to input as a result of that. So we want to make sure that the numbers themselves within the document are consistent from section to section, and also that they represent the most recent numbers and information that's available. The third item that I think we need to address is on the cover. I've just included a generic picture of what I use for Eastern Washington. But what I think we want to do is something on the cover that really depicts the city of Othello. So if you have ideas as council members on how we can best represent the city, just do a visual representation on the cover of this, that would be great. The first thing that comes to mind for me is the water tower, because that's so distinctive for the city of Othello, but that may not be the image that you want for the city. So give that some thought. We can include that anytime through this process, but it is one of those elements that we want to make sure that we are able to put the best foot forward for the city as we bring forward the comprehensive plan. The last element is, as we were going through this process, the city was in the process of developing and updating their water system plan. The information from that newly adopted water system plan had not been incorporated into this document. We want to make sure all that most recent updated information for the water system is included in this plan as well. So that's the fourth element we still need to address. So in terms of future for this process, what I envision is that we have a need to compile all of those elements. We need a good and complete thorough review, I think, from a variety of eyes, both the public and by the council. And once we are able to put those elements back together, we'll hold a public hearing and see if we can get the comprehensive plan adopted after a pretty long and substantial effort on behalf of the city. And again, I can't leave this evening without complimenting the Planning Commission for their work and effort. We can't forget that they spent nearly 2 years going through this process and beginning to develop those policies and goals that you find in the plan. And I think that represents a pretty amazing and substantial amount of work from them and the citizens of Othello. So it's, we're going to wind up with a document that really, I think, reflects a broad base of opinions and thoughts and desires and vision for the city, all contained within the document. So I think it will be a very important document for the city, and that's why it's important that it be correct. And so we'll work through that, and again, any input we can receive from the council in obtaining that final goal of bringing this document to its completion would be greatly appreciated. Any questions?
Tim, or go ahead. My thoughts on this is I think I would like to recommend that us as a council set up a committee through the mayor, American Point. But I think we need a committee to look into this a little bit ourselves. I know the Planning Commission done a lot of work. I know Daryl's done a lot of work. But I've been going through this thing, and there are some things that we need to look at again and change some, update some of them. And I think it'd be the right way to go is at least have a committee out of the council here to look into this and help Daryl a little bit, because like he says, I think a few more eyes wouldn't hurt a thing on it. I've come up with quite a few things that needs to be addressed in here, and that's my recommendation.
Mr. Council, are you interested in that? Okay, then. Assuming Ken, you're one of them?
I nominate two Kens and a Dan. Can I get a second?
So, Ken Taylor, you're going to take it?
Yeah.
I'll take it. Got some things you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, there's quite a few in there.
Okay, who else? Can't have a committee of one. That doesn't work.
Whoever's not here.
Eugene's not here.
Eugene, I know, can't do it, so.
I'll help.
I was like, okay, Gina? We have one more?
I'll go ahead and look at it.
Okay. Ken Johnson, okay. Okay, I guess.
Well, I look forward to that opportunity to work with the council committee and work towards the finalization of this and return to development. And we'll arrange the time and we'll get together and then get this back to the council for consideration and final action.
Okay. Thank you, Daryl. I do tell the Planning Commission thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we appreciate all the work they've done, and we're still looking for another planning commissioner, right?
Still looking.
So if anybody's out there, we sure could use another person.
The other thing to keep in mind is that the next big job on their plate is, once we now concluded or about to conclude the process for the comprehensive plan, the next step in that process is the updating of the development code, so we ensure that it's consistent right. with the goals and policies that are now going to be contained in the comprehensive plan. So that's going to be a huge undertaking for the Planning Commission to look at that. It probably has more day-to-day impact for the citizens of Othello than the comprehensive plan does, because it's the rules and regulations that are followed when they go forward with development. So it's a very key step in this process, and that's something that maybe will make some folks excited to get on the Planning Commission so they can be involved in that.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate what you're doing. Okay, 2.03, Adams County Fire District number 5, yearly report, Assistant Chief Salisbury.
My name is Tom Salisbury, Assistant Chief Fire District, and I believe I sent you guys all your information in the packet, pretty much stating what we've done throughout the year and the fourth quarter for the city. As an assistant chief, we haven't had any problems with anything. Everything seems to be running well. Inspections are going well. I asked the council if they have any questions about anything that they've read through the packet and seen anything that they had any questions about.
Well, I see your district has 29 firefighters on the roster right now in a recruiting class. Anybody for recruitment?
I've got 3 applications.
Oh, good.
I'd like to see at least 6 or 8. It's a long, lengthy process to take them through the class. It's 2 nights a week for 2.5 months. And typically, we have a washout period in there, and if we start out, I've had classes with 10, we end up with 4. So typically, if I start with 3 people. It's a lot of time and effort. I'm not saying I don't want them to be volunteers, but I was talking to the secretary, I didn't talk to the chief about it. Maybe we can bring them on in a different way, you know, instead of doing the half-month class, maybe condense it down and have them start showing up for training as recruits, and they don't actually participate in firefighting until we get them through some of the training. That's the way it used to be in the old day. I know when I showed up, they gave me my stuff and said, start showing up for training. And you didn't actually participate in any live fires or anything like that until you've had the training or been on for 6 months to a year. And then you can actually start going out and fight fires. And that might be something we might be looking at doing so we get more people. When you tell them that you got a 2.5 months of 2 hours a night or, you know, two times a week, they kind of go, oh my gosh, that's a lot of time. And it is a lot of time. But there's a lot of training that's involved too. So I haven't talked to Gary about doing something like that, but that might be something we look at doing, because we just don't have people knocking down the door to join the fire department. We've been in the paper, I think, 6 weeks straight, asking for volunteers. And, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort. People are so busy nowadays with families and stuff like that, so it's hard. We got a good group of people, a good nucleus of people that show up. I mean, sometimes during the holidays it gets a little thin, but hopefully everything keeps going well. And if we get more applications, you know, like I said, I'd like to see at least 6 people, but I'm not, you know.
So we're comfortable that at 29 firefighters basically do?
29, like I said, out of the 29, if for a structured fire, you can get, if you get 10 to 15, that's great. We've been on fires where we've had 5, not so great. You know, and it all falls back on, you know, if you don't have the manpower, there's certain things you can't do. You can't send people into buildings if you don't have people there to back them up. You know, so it comes down to manpower. And like I said, luckily Othello's been, we've had a good group of people that show, you know, they show up. It may come to the point down the road that we look at having to hire another full-time person, so we got coverage on weekends and stuff like that. We still have coverage on weekends because we use our volunteer officers, but it may come to a point where we have to hire another guy just so you have one guy at the station all the time with the volunteers. So, you know, that's just something down the road. We've looked at some other projects too, maybe not a sleeper program, but where they have kids come in, like college kids, and we set up dormitories style type deal. But that gets us into a lot more responsibility on us if we did something like that, because we have people actually living at the station, and they may be college kids going to school during the day, and then they're there on the weekends. So we got people to man the station. It's called not a sleeper program. They do it in Moses Lake or in Quincy. But Quincy, you know, like there again, it adds a lot to it. So hopefully we can get some more volunteers, more people to participate.
Just a comment. The one thing that's very important to all the businesses and the residents in Othello is the classification that the city has through the district rating. And we've maintained 5 for several years due to the efforts of the fire department. Several years ago, we were kind of in danger of going to a 6, but the efforts of the fire department kept us at a 5. I understand we can only go to a 4 if it's a fully manned, full time.
Yeah,
right.
Of course, it's to be a fully manned fire department. You're probably looking at, you know, three people on staff at all times. And then you're looking at probably 15 to 20 people full time, which really isn't feasible with the monies that we collect in taxes and what you guys are paying in contract fees. So, like I said, if we can keep getting good people. You know, I keep going out doing inspections and asking people if they want to volunteer. So I get everybody saying, oh yeah, that sounds like fun. Well, you know, they go, oh, we'll come down and get an application. Well, they never show up for the application. We'll keep working on it. You know, like I said, we got a good group of people right now. I mean, like I said, if numbers keep dropping off, obviously we're going to have to do something, you know, but that's, you know, in the future down the road.
Well, we appreciate what everybody does. I went to the dinner the other night. We have it next time.
Yeah,
you see a lot of the same faces year after year, the dedication to Othello, yeah, and the area around it, so it's pretty neat to see. Very impressive. Any questions from the council? I see we got re-rated at 5 again, I see. So that's a good thing.
I think it went up a little too, didn't it, from the year previous? Because we're doing,
right.
The more inspections we do, the higher rating we get, the you know, response times, water system, the city's water system, keeping the tanks full, and having adequate water. There's a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that's pretty important for our citizens also, because if our rating goes up, so does your homeowner's insurance and everything else.
We've had a lot of people, actually, insurance companies now with GPS, they call the fire department a lot, and they want to know, well, where's this address and how many, because they do it by ground miles to their house. We've had people like a tenth of a mile over the 5 miles, and their insurance goes almost double. And they're upset about what can we do. I mean, that's with the GPS and the way they can measure stuff now, you know, insurances are hitting all those people right at that five mile. And we're also looking at thinking down the road. If we do get enough people, maybe put another station further out, like kind of like we got at Bruce, and that would help those people in that area further out. As long as we have people to man the station, that's the problem, having the people in that area. You got to have so many people respond to that station so many times a year. So that's another thing we could do. But like I said, we got to have volunteers in that area that respond to that station, which would be probably south and west of town somewhere.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chief,
we appreciate you coming.
Let us know.
Okay, 2.04, Pet Rescue Annual Report. Amy Berger.
Hi, my name is Jamie Kruger. I am the temporary shelter coordinator, and I'm here to talk to you about what we did this year. And so we are no longer calling it a pound. We have done a lot of upgrades down there, and it is not a pound, it is a shelter. So this has been kind of our motto, do what you can with what you have where you are. And so in early October, we decided that it was time to really get down and dirty and make some improvements. The storage inside the building was a huge issue. We didn't have enough room. Outside, you can see the kennels weren't very well covered. The dogs weren't protected from the elements very well, so we decided to get to work. We had these pins, four large pins, and they weren't very small dog worthy. I don't know if you've noticed, but we've got a lot of chihuahuas around here. And they tend to get through all these little holes and things. So one of the things we needed to do was change around some pins so we had some pins that were small dog worthy. I don't know if any of you guys have had the pleasure of meeting Mickey Keeson. She's our president, and she does a lot of thinking. And so she sent pictures of these plans for me to have the Coyote Ridge people come and put these cages together. And this is exactly how it came through on my computer. So I'm down there telling these guys what to do, and it was pretty tough because it was hard to read, but we got it done. So we tore down all the existing holding pins, and then we bought some heavy-duty kennels. They have smaller gaps and they're more like a welded wire. Again, to make these more appropriate for all the dogs we get around here. We turned the city pins so that they were more accessible to the power outlets that are over here. And then we put these clear plastic tarps around to protect them from the elements, but so they could also kind of see out so they didn't feel so closed in. Have any of you guys driven by there? By the shelter? Okay. So if you have, you've seen all these new roofs that we've put on. It's quite a process. It probably takes at least an hour because we built these all ourselves. But if you actually step inside the kennel, you can feel the difference. They really are protected. The electrical outlets have been improved. And now each of the pins has heated dog beds in them, and the water buckets are heated. Hopefully we won't need that much longer, right? We added the storage shed, which allowed us to move a bunch of the stuff outside. And really the whole reason for that was is so that now we can really spray and really bleach this area to make sure that it's sanitary. A major blessing has been the work crew from Coyote Ridge. They come about every 2 weeks. Usually it's on a Thursday. And they really helped by doing most of the labor for us, which has been really nice. So we've been working really hard to clean it up and make it presentable, as well as keep a quality of operations and the caring for the animals that we have down there. You can see the new pictures over here of all the roofs that they have on. So outside you've seen the improvements, but inside we've made a lot of improvements, little things and big things. Man, these guys have been volunteering down there for like 4 years and they've never had hot water. They've been taking buckets and filling them with the cold water and washing the dishes. Is that not crazy? So finally, we got a sink and a hot water heater so that they can wash the dishes and everything with hot water. That's been a huge improvement. We have a lot of volunteers. They're awesome. We have a kind of a group, a different group that comes in every day. So we are finalizing our plans because we're hoping to break ground. We are going to break ground this spring. We're excited about the things that we're doing. We're excited about our future. This past year has been great for us. We've rehomed 350 plus animals. We've connected with other rescue organizations, especially over on the coast, the NOAA Center, PAWS. We've been transferring our animals to them. So right now we've got like 5 chihuahuas at the pound, or at the shelter, sorry. And no one around here is gonna adopt a chihuahua because there's so many of them. And so we transfer them over there and they're finding them homes within a week, which is just absolutely amazing. So anyway, we also have a website and we're on Facebook. And we are just really excited about you guys being our partner in this whole experience and the difference that we're making in the lives of the animals around here. And so if you haven't seen it, drive by, see the changes that we've made. Because we're pretty excited. So lastly, what you really want to know. Total intakes for the year were 317. For the city, we took in 163. And for the county, we took in 157. And that is dogs. So there were some owner claims. Some of them dug out. Some of them were stolen. We had a couple pass away. The city euthanized some, we euthanized some, but that's a basic summary. So, any questions?
You're staying really busy.
We are staying busy, yes.
Well, we appreciate what you do to the city and citizens. So, you know, it's having to clean up the dog kennels. I remember doing that for years. Not pleasant smelling, especially when it gets warm. But tell everybody thank you very much for all the hard work they're doing for the council, from the council to all of them. And, you know, we'll continue, I know, to support it. I know everybody's encouraged about your new building. That's pretty neat.
Yes, we are too.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Okay. 2.05 Police Department Annual Report. Chief Dunnigan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members, Steve Dunnigan, Chief of Police for Othello. I'm happy to say that we're about ready to go to print with our annual report for 2012. And so tonight I just wanted to go over some of the highlights and we'll get right to the most important, or at least what's most on everybody's mind, and that's about our crime rate. I'm real happy to report that we've had some significant downturns in all of our Part 1 UCR offenses. These are the ones that are reported to the federal government. They're the ones that are the most serious, kind of given the type of crime that it is. As you know, we didn't have any homicides again this year, and our total UCR Part 1 offenses reported to the police department was only 567. That's down by 26%. Our sexual assaults is down by 50%. Our robberies were down by 17%. Aggravated assaults, and these are the serious assaults with guns, knives, baseball bats, those kinds of things that cause significant injury, is down 55%. Overall, all assaults is down 38%. Our burglary rate went down 23%. Thefts down 20%, and our vehicle thefts went down 30%. The only area that we went up in, and I know it's going to sound like an awful lot, is a 350% increase in the amount of arsons. Well, in 2011 we had two, and in 2012 we had none. If you remember, we had a series where somebody was going around throwing fire on cars, so we had several car fires, probably four. So that accounts for some of that increase. Overall, cleared by arrests and cleared by juvenile arrests for those UCR Part 1s, that's also down 42%. So the number of arrests were down in correspondence with the number of reports and the number of crimes that were actually being committed. So that's all staying fairly in line. We were still able to manage a 40% recovery rate of stolen property, which isn't bad. I think that's probably a little low because with new officers, we have a tendency to overinflate what we report as being stolen property values. If you have a 10-year-old fishing pole and you paid $50 for it, the value is probably worth $5. And instead, people report it at what it would cost them to get a new one, and at today's price, it's $100. So sometimes we get a little overinflated there. Felony arrests was down 50% overall. The next area we go to that we look at is an area called workload indicators. And basically, traffic collisions fall in that. So does the number of calls for service, calls per officer, those kinds of statistics. Traffic collisions was up slightly this year, up by 14%. Calls for service, however, again, is in line with what we're finding with the crime rates. We were down 17% in the straight-up calls for service. In 2011, there was 6,424. In 2012, there was only 5,288. Calls per officer went down from 428 to 352, or another 17%. Matches right up, reduction. And we still use the same number of commissioned officers, which was 15 across the board. Driving while under the influence cases went down by 10%. And yet our patrol hours went up, so we were able, because we weren't investigating as much, we were able to put more resources on the road and patrol. Our investigative time went way down, and the amount of time that we were actually doing reports went down as well. We didn't have those crimes being reported. In records, this is reports processed and copies of things that we send out, public disclosure, things like that. In reports processed through the records section, there was a 13% decrease. So that's right in line with what we're finding with our crime stats. Copies and reports that were sold or sent out was down 23%. Individuals that were fingerprinted was down 44%, which is kind of unusual because our CPLs, or our concealed license permits, are on the incline. They are, we're getting like 6 and 7 a day. They're really going up. But they went up by 46% over last, in 2012 over 2011. So, and with every CPL, there has to be a fingerprint. The only other fingerprints that we do a lot of them for school districts when people want to come in. We do the cities for any of the employees who are going to deal with children, like at the pools and stuff like that. Medical calls that we dispatched was down by 8%, and our fire calls that we dispatched were up by 6%. They're in over in 2012 over 2011. And we dispatched for the fire service, but we dispatched city and for the county. So our number of 320 is much higher than what you see on the fire report, which is only city numbers. As far as the admin side of the house, there's a few things that I think that it's important for you to know is that through my office, there were 15 formal internal investigations conducted. 7 of those cases were sustained, 3 were not sustained, 3 were unfounded, and 2 are pending. In addition, we reviewed the only 2 vehicle pursuits that we had. We review all pursuits and all uses of force issues, and we make sure that it all falls within state law, falls within policy, and then we evaluate it and we look and see if there is a need for updated training, updated equipment, or what have it that might make the situation better. So we reviewed 2 vehicle pursuits, which is all we had in 2012. That was great. And both were found to be within policy and both were found to be within the law. We reviewed 24 response to resistance reports to ensure policy compliance and again evaluate for training and equipment. And we found that all 24 of those were within law and within policy. So we had nobody outside that at all. Every year, just in 2012 was no different. We did a complete audit of the evidence room. There were a few housekeeping issues that we needed to attend to, but all the evidence was in the facility and accounted for. And we do that on an annual basis, that's every year. So, with that, this will be in print within the next week, and I'll have copies out on the front counter for anybody that wants one. Do you have any questions?
Accreditation, what is?
We're not scheduled for reaccreditation until 2014.
We're going to go for it again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think we should sail right on through it. I think we're keeping up with everything the way that it's supposed to be. But I don't see that would be any.
Are you up to full force now, Paul?
No, I can hire only one.
Questions? Thank you, Chief. That was good news.
It is great news. The guys are working really hard. And so we try a few things and we try different tactics to try to lower this. We rely on surveys and studies that are done outside the department through the International Association of Chiefs of Police and other agencies that are doing some kind of unique things. I think for Adams County in its entirety, there's probably a little bit of a downswing in numbers, but I think there's a lot of contributing factors to that. I think what we do contributes to it. I think that our juvenile processes that we've undertaken, the JDAI initiative, that has something to do with it. So I think there's a lot of contributing factors, but it's all good and it's all beneficial. Works out for us. Hopefully we'll be able to maintain that through 2013.
Well, to the officers from the City Council,
thank you
very much for their hard work.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, 2.06, 2013 BIOS Software Service Agreement. Spencer?
Thank you very much. As you know, we contract with a company named BIOS Software, and they provide We've been contracting with them for about the last 4 years, and they provide the software that we use for all of our accounting needs. And every year we need to update, get a new service agreement with them. And so I've attached to, in your packets, you'll see the 2013 service agreement. And that's there for your review. We're not going to, tonight's just informational only, so you can review that. I just wanted to point out a couple of things. We use their software for our GL, for our receipting, our billing, the utilities, the accounts payable, and the payroll. So really, anything that is accounting is in the system, and it's been quite good for the city. As, like I said, the city's been using their software for the last 4 years. It was a big thing that Mike Bailey was pushing for, to use their software. And they've proven to be very responsive and very helpful. They've always been available for questions when we need this or that. So very available. So it's been quite nice. Other than that, the cost of the 2013 service agreement is just a hair over $8,000, and this was included in our budgeting process for the 2013 year. It's $60 more than it cost last year, just as a, so you can kind of compare there. And other than that, if you have any questions about the software or the company, I can answer any of those you have. And we'll put this item on next Monday night's agenda for your consideration.
Question from the council? I'm sure as far as the council and the mayor, as long as you guys like it, it works for us, and our audits are clean. We're all with you. So,
yeah, great.
That's great. It's worked out so well with the city, and they've worked with us. I know they've done a lot of work with us to make sure we receive what we're looking for from them. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, quite
okay.
A bit.
Okay, 2.07, SWAC report, grass control. Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mayor. One item on there, I think there's a little bit in your packet here about some revisions and updates we're going to do in the regulations and whatnot. We haven't approved those yet. It won't go through until the next meeting. But anyway, I'll just give you a little update on those, and we'll continue to work on those. I don't think they've been changed for many years, the way they looked. So they went through them, and we've kind of got these up on the docket, and we're going to consider them and update everything as far as that's concerned. The main issue I wanted to talk about a little bit here is, I know last summer we had some problems with grass and whatnot in our totes in the city, and they got out to the county, and they had some fires and a few things involved in supposedly the grass clippings. Whether that's actually where it happened or not, nobody can say for sure. But anyway, I know it was brought up that we wanted to talk about maybe doing something with these grass clippings. I don't really think we want to go to an individual tote separate from everything else as far as picking up your grass at the individual households and whatnot. I think it'd be rather expensive, and as long as we've still got our contract with our present carrier, I think that we should maintain what we have. But my thought is that, I know you as the mayor, you've considered this too as far as maybe having a location where we could take your grass clippings to. And I think the ideal spot, which is going to create some other problems too, but the ideal spot would be down at Public Works. We would have to set up some kind of provision down there for the citizens to take their grass clippings there. I'm not saying that everybody would do it. You're still going to have them in the tote somewhat, but it might deviate and take some of this away from the totes and the problem that we're having with the grass clippings. I think we could do it down there better than having them some of our other locations, because you're going to have a problem with smell and probably a little dumpage and whatnot on the ground when people transfer them from one place to the other. But what the issue is right now, there's some grant money becoming available, and I think it'll be around the middle of February, which we're right here, you might say, around the 15th of February. And what those will amount to, at least those, I guess you wouldn't actually call them a tote, but the container for this these grass clippings, I think would pretty well be taken care of as cost-wise for that. We would still have the expense of the Public Works having to maintain and keep control of what's going on with the totes and whatnot. But possibly if we could maybe have our SWAC committee, I think we have one already set up for that, is look at this a little bit and maybe find out for sure on these grants where what the actual date is and see what we can come up with. In the meantime, maybe we could get possibly amount of what we think would be we would need for these containers. Talking to some people, Richfield's already got this process in motion over there, and it's worked quite well in the last two or three years. The problem is we find out that you don't want to use metal for grass because about 4 or 5 years they rust out the metal, so you'll probably want to go to a plastic container of some type. Then the issue is, who's going to transfer those from where we have them located, say Public Works? Are we as a city going to take them out, or are we going to have our contractor add that on his contract? So there's some issues that we got to resolve even after we buy the totes, so that, or the containers. So I think it's up to us as the council to make that decision of what we want to do. Or we want to forget it for another year. Or what we could possibly do is turn in for this grant, maybe at least purchase the containers and then go from there. So it's kind of our decision to make what we want to do from here.
So the fires really only happened when it was really hot. That was the issue.
Basically.
The other carriers ever have trouble with it? I never heard anything from CDSI or whatever it was.
Not really. I'm not sure. They say that's what happened from spontaneous combustion. I've heard it from other issues that it's other things involved in it that caused the fire and it created the grass to catch fire. So, I mean, who's going to prove what happened? Maybe the fire department could prove that for us, but I don't know.
So we have a SWAC committee, Councilor?
Yes.
Do they want to, Council want the SWAC committee to meet and come back with a recommendation?
Yep. We'd have to meet soon because this grant is due in a week.
Okay.
I think Gina's on, I think. No?
I don't know.
No.
I don't have that list with me.
I'm representative to the SWAC.
Maybe we just have some volunteers, because I think you're just dedicated to Adams County.
But I think there's three on that committee.
I don't remember who they are, if they are.
I know I'm on it, but...
So there's some people, council members that want to meet fairly quick.
You know, I see here that the members of the water committee, Gina, Dan, and Kincaider, are going to be meeting Wednesday. Uh-huh. Could it be just possible that they take a few minutes and look at it at that same time?
Does that work?
Sure.
Is that okay with the members that are meeting?
That's great. That'll
work.
Okay, that'll work. Since you're here, we can just look at that. Back with a
recommendation or something. Good. Okay,
that'd be good. Anything else on that one? Yeah. Sure. Public Works, right. All right. Thank you. Okay. Any committee reports?
Yes. One other one here. We had a Guama meeting, our last Guama meeting, and we talked a little bit about sending out a request for the cities and the counties in their area to send a letter of recommendation for what Guam is doing and whatnot. What they're going to do, they're going to go back to state and see if they can get some state money. I don't know whether it'll come out of that $31 million or not, but there's money there, and then there's also some money up and down for the Columbia River, I don't know what they call that fund actually anyway, but there's a fund for the Columbia River itself, and they may be able to tap a little of that money. But the idea is what they're trying to do and stay alive is to help monitor some of these wells and whatnot are going dry, just like the map he showed you here earlier. Somebody has to monitor that, and nobody's doing it except Guama. They're the only ones doing it. And in that Odessa aquifer, they've got that plan that they're talking about recharging some of the aquifers for the existing wells. And if the Columbia Basin Project goes, that's going to cut off some of the wells, which would help the others. But the replenishing of the wells from the other direction, like Odessa and whatnot up in there, Lincoln County is pushing that very hard. But that ties in with why Guama wants to stay alive. They've got some small issues like the Black Sands area out here. They're going to end up with a little money from them to help support to keep that portion up for monitoring purposes and whatnot. That's kind of involved with the Bureau, the Irrigation District, and the White or the Black Sands area group. But that's a small part, and it isn't going to last for very long of a period of time. But I think, I don't know whether Eamon has received that request or not, but I think it's in due process to do that because legislators are meeting on those items at the present time, and they need those letter of support. So they're not asking us for any money. They just want a letter of support.
It's on next Monday night's agenda, the 11th, just ahead of when you're going to the legislative conference. Same week.
So the Columbia Development League does not monitor the wells?
No. Okay. It's done through Guama. Okay. Yep. That's next week's.
Any other questions for Ken?
Chamber, good. Announcements. The members of the street committee, Gina, Dan, and Mark, will be meeting at Public Works on Wednesday at 6 at noon. So you're all aware of that. And the members of the water committee, Gina, Dan, and Ken, will be meeting at Public Works on Wednesday at 12:30. Now I guess we got another one on there, huh? So you guys will be busy. And then the members of the audit and finance committee, Dan, Ken, Johnson, and Mark, will be meeting in the conference room on Thursday at 7 at noon. So lots of committee meetings. And there's also an ACDC meeting at the Timeout Pizza on Thursday at 6 p.m. if anybody can come. So anything else from council?